We're going to be looking this morning at Satan's seven sinful suggestions for youth. Of course, they are sinful suggestions for all of us of any age from Satan, although I would say that there are probably some that he uses specifically for youth, whereas there are others that he would use more for us the older we get, and they are somewhat different. So these, while some of these will be the same, some would be different if we were speaking of the elderly or the middle-aged or any other age group. But as we think about this, I want us to realize what we're taught. In James chapter 1 and verses 12 through 15, James explains to us how we're drawn away into sin by our own desires. Satan doesn't get us to sin by getting us to do things that we don't want to do. He gets us to sin, he tempts us with things that are already things that we're desiring. And so James explains to us that we have this desire. Some translations refer to it as a lust, but it's something we want. And that desire then leads us to fall into a temptation. And then that temptation, if we give into it, will cause us to fall into sin. And that sin, if we continue to live in that pattern of sinfulness in our lives, will lead us to death, ultimately. And it's hard for young people sometimes to even think about the possibility of dying. Especially teenagers think they're immortal. They're never going to die. Nothing could ever happen to them. But of course, we know the truth of the matter is that death can strike at any age, and we need to be prepared for it. Often, however, if we will face that weakness that we have, that temptation that Satan is putting toward us, James 4:7 tells us that if we will resist the devil, if we'll stand up to him, he's a bully. And bullies like to pick on people that seem weaker than they are. But James tells us if we'll stand up to the devil, if we'll resist him, then he will flee from us. He'll run away. Because that's the way bullies work. They run off when somebody actually stands up to them and shows that they're not going to take that bullying anymore. So we need to be the kind of people who are going to stand up to Satan when he gives us these suggestions, when we have these thoughts, these temptations to do things that we know are not what God wants us to do. We need to resist it. We need to stand up to it. We need to fight against it. And when we do that, he'll run away. 1 Corinthians 10, the scripture that was read to us, we want to focus especially on verse 13. No temptation that we've ever faced is so powerful that we just couldn't have escaped it. Now, all of us adults will tell all of the young people, in spite of the fact that there's not a temptation that's been so strong that it just couldn't have been overcome, all of us have given in to some of those temptations. But Paul explains that that temptation is not unique. None of us have ever faced the temptation that nobody else has ever been tempted like I'm being tempted. Yes, the temptations you face are common. They're the same temptations in various different areas of your life, the same things that other people face. Sometimes people think, well, nobody's ever faced the situation that I'm in. Nobody's ever had to suffer like I'm suffering. Nobody's ever had to put up with what I'm putting up with. Yes, they have. It's not the first time. You're not the only one. Now, it's true that not everybody faces exactly the same temptations. Not everybody is going to have the same weaknesses and the same struggles. But the fact of the matter is, somebody else has gone through it before you, and somebody else is probably going through it at the same time as you, and somebody else will be going through it tomorrow and the next day and so forth. Now, I will say there are times where it seems like certain temptations are stronger than other times. In certain societies, certain temptations are stronger than they would be in other societies. At certain times of our lives, certain temptations are stronger. The Bible warns us to flee youthful lusts, youthful desires. There are some desires that just really seem to kind of hit us more when we're young than they do when we're older. Maybe it's just kind of a situation of outgrowing them. Maybe it's a situation of the things that we desired when we were young aren't the same things we desire as we grow older. But sometimes we desire different things as we grow older. But whatever the case may be, the Bible does indicate that certainly there are differences in those temptations, but there's not ever a situation where it's just completely unique. They are common to everyone. But he also explains that God will give us a way out. The problem most of the time, the reason, if we think back to those times that we've given in to temptation, most of the time, we weren't looking for a way out. We were looking for an excuse to go in. And that's why we fell. If we would look for that way out, God gives us a way out. He's not going to allow us to be tempted with something that we could not overcome. But so many times, of course, we still, in spite of that, fail. And it's, again, something that's common. We need not think, well, I fall to temptation. I'm a horrible person, worse than everybody else, because I gave in to temptation. Everybody gives in to temptation. Even though it's not a temptation that's so strong that we have to give in, we could have overcome it. But all of us have given in. Everyone in the world, in the history of the world, except for Jesus, gave in to that temptation at some point or another. And so we need to understand that that is the way that works. Even though we could overcome it, we still don't. We will not be 100% effective at that. But that doesn't mean we give up and that we quit trying. We want to think about these things now that Satan suggests, because the things he says to us will oftentimes sound good at first. Satan's tricky that way. He doesn't come out and tell us something that would be that's just so obviously bad that we go, oh, no, no. Instead, he paints it up pretty. He makes it sound good. And so we've got to watch out for that. He's tricky. He's deceitful. He's a liar. And he'll lie about these things to make it sound good. Now, before we get into these things, though, I will want us to understand one more thing, that God tells us the truth about what sin is. When he describes in Hebrews 11 what Moses did by faith, he says that Moses, by his faith, chose to suffer affliction with the people of God, with the people of Israel, God's children. He chose to suffer with them rather than enjoying the pleasure of sin for a season. You know, there are probably some people, and maybe even some preachers, who would tell people, well, sin, no, sin's never, you couldn't enjoy sin, you couldn't get any, it's not fun, you couldn't get anything out of it that you would like. And that's a lie. If sin wasn't pleasurable, if there wasn't something about sin that was enjoyable at the time, Satan would have been out of business a long time ago. God tells us the truth. There is a pleasure to sin for a little while, for a season. But the consequences of it will bring suffering and pain in the long run. So many people, though, get caught up in the, well, it feels good right now. It's fun right now. And they don't think about the consequences of what's going to happen in the future. So the first thing that Satan suggests is one time won't hurt you. Well, you can just do it once. It's okay, just this one time. How many people have been caught by just one time? Alcoholism starts with just one drink. So now that one time won't hurt you. Drug addiction starts with just that one time. Sexual purity is lost with just that one time. In fact, I had some friends when I was younger who, young couple dating, and she wound up pregnant, and they wound up later getting married. You know, I talked with them about that situation, and they said, you know, it was the first time that we'd given in to that sexual impurity. The first time. And she got pregnant that first time. Lives are often destroyed with just one lie. Or just one action. Just one time of speeding down the road. Or racing cars. Or, you know, any number of things. I knew a young man who was out with his friends. And they were diving off of the side of a cliff into a pool. And they tricked him. They were on their knees, acting like the water was deeper than it was. He dove off and broke his neck. One time. That's all it takes. When we hear Satan say, one time won't hurt you, we need to remember, one time can definitely hurt you. Now, does it every time? No. We'd all be dead if one time hurt you and killed you dead every time. We'd all been like Ananias and Sapphira by now. We'd all been like Uzzah who reached out and touched that ark just one time and zapped him dead. It doesn't always get you the first time. But to say that one time won't hurt you is not true. One time can be the downfall of you. With so many things, in so many areas of your life, one time starts the ball rolling down the hill, and then you can't stop it. And you have to get to the bottom of the hill and reach your lowest depths before you realize and before you come to a stop and say, I got to go back up now. We need to beware. One time can hurt you. Secondly, and I skipped that slide, sorry about that. Secondly, the saying that Satan whispers, if you loved me, you would. This one is often used by young people, particularly young men will tell young ladies, well, if you really loved me, you'd do this with me, for me, whatever. This, a lot of times, is used because of a complete and total lack of understanding of what true love really is. The Bible tells us that love is patient. Love is kind. A young man who loves a young lady will be patient. He will wait for marriage to be involved with her. And yet, so many times this statement is made, or some variation of it, to try to seduce someone or coerce someone into doing something that they shouldn't. In Genesis 39, verses 7 through 9, Joseph's boss's wife, Potiphar's wife, was trying to seduce him to go and lie with her. And he recognized that for what it was, not love, but lust, just a sinful desire. And so he said, how could I do this great wrong against God? If someone truly loves you, and if you truly love them, you're not going to encourage them to do something that goes against God, and you're not going to allow them to encourage you to do something that goes against what God wants you to do with your life. 1 Corinthians 13 and verse 5, it says, love does not behave itself unseemly. It doesn't behave itself in a selfish way. And yet so many times, that's exactly what this kind of a statement is. Just a selfish desire. And may I speak bluntly for just a moment. A sexual relationship between a young man and a young woman, the act itself is not at all what love is. Animals who have no love for one another at all can perform that act. Dogs and cats and other animals that could care less about one another can do that. True love shows itself in wanting to join spiritually with another, emotionally with another, and physically with another for life. To mate with one another for the rest of your life. Till death do us part. That's true love. And that kind of love will grow stronger and stronger. What far too many young people have found is that if you loved me, you would, is soon followed by, I don't love you anymore. Once they've gotten what they wanted, they're off to greener pastures. They're off to try with someone else. And so many have been heartbroken and have had their lives devastated by, if you love me, you would. The third we want to notice is everybody is doing it. I'm sure we've all heard that one, especially anyone who's ever raised children. Well, everybody's going to the... Everybody's doing... Everybody. I remember on one occasion when I was younger and I had an aunt, my mother's youngest sister, lived with us. She was about 6 or 7 years older than me. She was in high school. And I the fashion at that time was some sort of little boots. They were some, I don't remember now what they even looked like, and she probably couldn't either for that matter. But she came home from school one day. She just had to have some of these boots because everybody at school had them. Now, I guarantee you, first of all, none of the boys had them, okay? But she meant all the girls had them. So my mom went up there, and she saw two girls wearing them. They were the two most popular girls. But there was only two girls wearing those boots like that. But that was everybody. Because everybody else was nobody. And that's why that was important. Well, you know, that's how many... Sometimes when we say everybody's doing it, we don't really mean everybody is doing it. But even if everybody is doing it, does that matter? You know, in the land of Canaan, we were talking about Elijah this morning in class, and talking about Ahab and all the problems they were having. In Israel of that day, everybody was worshiping Baal, or at least it seemed that way, and Elijah certainly thought it was everybody but him. God told him there's really 7,000 others that haven't done it. But still, it felt like, I mean, if you think about 7,000 out of an entire nation, that could feel like everybody is doing it. But even if everybody is doing it, that doesn't make it right. Matthew chapter 7 and verses 13 and 14 describe this. You know, this phrase, everybody is doing it, is the national anthem of hell. That's what will lead us to destruction. Because Matthew 7 and verses 13 to 14 explains it. There's a way that's wide and everybody's going that way. A lot of people. The majority of people are going that direction. But that's the one that leads to destruction. He said, there's another path that's narrow and there's only a few people going that way. But that's the one that leads to life. On so many occasions, we would be better off to find out what everybody's doing and do the opposite. Because so many times, they're wrong. The majority is not a safe guide for us. But Satan uses peer pressure. He uses that feeling that everybody's doing a certain thing. I've got to be part of that group. I can't be different from the crowd. Don't want to swim upstream. You ever done that? You ever been someplace like Disney or up in Gatlinburg or somewhere and there's a crowd of people coming out of something or going into something and you're trying to go the other way? You know how hard that is? It is hard to go against the crowd of people coming the other direction. That's tough. But that's what God calls us to do. Because that crowd of people is heading for destruction. And we don't want to go there. And the fourth thing we want to notice is Satan will often appeal to us and to our sense of self-worth by just saying, well, you're just chicken. Oh, you won't do that? That's just because you're a scaredy cat. You're just a chicken. You don't have any courage. If you were brave, you'd do it. Well, sometimes courage means standing up against what others want you to do. In Proverbs chapter 1 and verse number 10, Solomon warns his son, "My son, if sinners entice you, don't consent. Don't agree. Don't go. Don't give in." I'm reminded of one young lady who was being teased because she wouldn't engage in some sinful activity. And they were making fun of her. She finally said, "You know, anytime I want to, I can become just like you." But can you ever become innocent like me again? Now, I know we know our sins can be forgiven and we can be washed whiter than snow. But you just ask Paul if being washed whiter than snow and being forgiven of your sin is the same as never having gone down that road. It may be the same with God, but our own conscience and our own memory haunts us of the things that we've done. And take it from somebody who was young and made some of those mistakes. It's better not to remember those things. It's better to have never done them at all. And Solomon was one of those who had been down that road too. And he was warning his son, "Look, I've been there. I've gone down that road. Son, it's not worth it. If they're enticing you, don't go. Have the courage to stand up against it. The threat of being called a chicken, a coward, a wimp, a sissy, whatever else terms they might use to try to goad you into doing something that you know you shouldn't do. Don't give in to it." Another very popular one is, "You only live once. You got to make the most of it, right? You only go around one time. So you got to do everything, try everything, go everywhere, do everything. You don't want to miss out, because if you miss out, you'll never know what you're missing." Unfortunately, there are a lot of things out there that just aren't worth going around even once. You know, Ephesians chapter 4, verses 17 through 20 says, "I say this and insist in the Lord that you no longer live as the Gentiles do, in the futility of their thinking. They are darkened in their understanding, being alienated from the life of God because of the ignorance that is in them due to the hardness of their hearts. Because they are callous, they have given themselves over to indecency, for the practice of every kind of impurity with greediness. But you did not learn about Christ like this. There are people out there who will literally try anything once. There are people out there who will do things, some of them in the name of religion even. Now, in the day that Paul was writing this to the church in Ephesus, there were cults of religious people who worshipped false gods, who part of the ways that they worshipped them was by involving themselves in all kinds of immoral activities. The temples had prostitutes involved with them. We saw in the story of Elijah on Mount Carmel, those priests were cutting themselves till they bled, Baal's priests. Bleeding all over the place. I'm surprised they didn't die from blood loss out there. I saw a story just a couple days ago. I want to say it was in Kentucky, but it may have been Alabama. I'm not sure exactly where that was now. But there was a preacher at a snake handling church who got bit by a rattlesnake, and he was bleeding all over the place. And they drink poison, and they, you know, thinking they're being religious and serving God. They're testing Him. They're trying Him. They're tempting Him. The idea that you only live once, and so you should just live however you can. Is it true that we only live once on this earth? Yes, Hebrews 9:27 says that. It's appointed to man once to die and then the judgment. But the question really is this life the only one that counts? Is this all there is to it? When we die, are we dead like Rover, dead all over? If so, then yeah, they're right. We need to do everything, anything we want to do and get it over with and done with before we die. But the Bible tells us that's not the way it works. Instead, the Bible tells us that after this life's over, we're going to be judged. It is appointed to man once to die, and then the judgment. And when we're judged, then that's going to determine a life that is much, much longer than this one was, or than this one will be to us. An eternity, then, either of life with God or of separation from Him. Mark 7:21-23, Jesus warns us, and in Luke 15:11-21-30, we see the results of wild living, that young man who went away from his father's commandments and went his own way. He suffered as a result of that. The sixth thing we want to notice is the phrase that it's just harmless fun. Well, harmless to whom? I think back to a lot of the school violence that we've had, the school shootings and things like that that we've had over the past decades. A lot of times what led up to that was those people that committed the violence had been mocked and bullied and picked on. Oh, it was just harmless fun. They were just joking. They were just teasing. But they were making fun of them and picking at them, right? It's just harmless fun. It was just harmless fun until they pushed somebody too far, until they teased somebody so much that person decided, I'm going to kill you for that. Sometimes things that are passed off as just harmless fun are anything but harmless fun. Just because you can't see scars or bruises on someone doesn't mean they didn't experience harm. It doesn't mean they're not hurt. As Christians, we need to be encouraging people, helping people, being kind to people, not saying and doing things that, oh, they may not leave a scar, but they may be hurtful. And they may wind up coming back to bite us in the end if we're not careful. We watch out for that. And it's such a common thing. We don't think anything of it, joking and teasing. And you know, if you know, when we joke and tease with our friends, and that can be harmless fun. There is some harmless fun there sometimes. There is such a thing as harmless fun. But we need to watch out. We have a rule at our house when it comes to joking and teasing and playing around, wrestling or whatever it might be, between amongst the kids and between parents and kids, whatever. If it's not fun for one, then it's not fun at all. If one person is not enjoying the joking, the teasing, then it's not a good thing. It's causing harm instead. You know, and so we try to live by it. We don't always get, you know, of course, there's often a learning curve there as well. But that's something for us to think about. Is it just harmless fun, really? And then, one of the devil's favorites. Nobody will ever know. Nobody will know. It's a secret. You can get away with it. And a lot of times, he's right that no other people ever find out. Think about all of the unsolved murders, unsolved robberies, unsolved crimes of all different kinds that there are out there. There are thousands upon thousands of people who have seemingly gotten away with it. They never got caught. They never went to jail. So maybe the devil's right. As long as nobody ever knows, I'll be all right. No. See, the problem is in that word body. It's true that no human being that has a body may ever find out, but God knows. He may not have a body, but He knows. Ephesians 5, verses 11 and 12 says, "Have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather expose them. For it is a shame to speak of the things they do in secret." There are people out there doing things in secret that are horrible, awful things. And it's embarrassing even to talk about some of those things. Unfortunately, sometimes because we don't talk about those things, we instead sweep it under the rug or pretend it doesn't exist. And that's not what Ephesians 5 says. Yes, it's embarrassing to talk about them. Yes, it's shameful that they're doing those things and to even. But he says, expose them. We cannot expose the evil things that are being done out there if we never admit they're being done. If we never say that they're doing those things. We live in our society today where kidnapping and slavery, this is an odd statistic, but verifiably true. There are more people enslaved today than there ever were during the time that we think of as slavery. Back in the 1700s and 1800s. There are more people enslaved today. They've been kidnapped and taken and sold into slavery. There are, you know, we see young people that are kidnapped or whatever on the news, and we don't know whatever happens with that. Now, there are some horrible things out there. We read about the child abuse that takes place. Some of us have seen it closer than we'd like to, because we've known families and children who've been affected by that. There are horrible things out there, and we can't just ignore them and pretend they don't exist. But instead, we need to expose them. But Proverbs 15:3 says, "The eyes of the Lord are in every place, keeping watch on the evil and the good." We may not know. There are things that we will never know about people that live not just right around us even. We won't even know what's going on in their lives. But the Lord's eyes are everywhere. You can't hide from Him. In Ecclesiastes 12, verses 13 and 14, it says, "Let's hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep His commandments. This is man's all." His whole duty, His whole purpose. "For God will bring every work into judgment, including every secret thing, whether good or evil." There are going to be some big surprises on Judgment Day. There are going to be some people who others thought were good, upstanding citizens, good, upstanding church members, that on the day of judgment, it's going to be revealed. Those secret things that they kept in their heart or in their thoughts or things they did, but they kept it secret and didn't let anybody else know. God's going to uncover all of that. As we conclude, I want to encourage especially our young people, but all of us as well. Ecclesiastes 11:9 says, "Rejoice, O young man, in your youth. Let your heart cheer you in the days of your youth. Walk in the ways of your heart and in the sight of your eyes. But know that for all these things God will bring you into judgment." The writer of Ecclesiastes says, young people, enjoy being young, but remember, God is going to judge you. You can enjoy being young without being involved in sinful activities. We're going to hopefully have some good, clean fun this afternoon with the young people. Play some games and eat some good food and sing some songs and things like that. We're going to have a good time. And I hope that nobody's going to be sinning involved in that. You know, that's our plan anyway, is that no one will sin in the involvement of that. But, you know, we need to think about all these things that Satan whispers. And there are probably other things he whispers in our ears. Have you listened to Satan's suggestions? Do you need to stop and start listening to God instead? If you're here today and you have a need to respond to God's invitation, maybe because you've been believing some of Satan's lies, maybe for other reasons, maybe you're not a Christian and you need to become one, Satan will whisper some suggestions. They all put it off. Wait till later. You don't want to do that yet. Don't wait. Satan wants you to wait. God wants you be right with Him as soon as you realize that you're not. If you're here and you have a need to respond to the invitation for any reason, please do so as we stand and as we sing.